Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. I want to thank today's sponsor, 3dcart. They're one of the first e-commerce platforms to hit the market, and for over 18 years, they have pioneered the e-commerce industry. And they have made it so starting an online business has never been easier. With our very special offer, you can try 3dcart for free for an entire month. Go to 3dcart.com/hack. That's the number 3dcart.com/hack. That's a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. You'll get the first month free.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a serial entrepreneur in the truest sense of the word. While in college, he started importing and selling pool tables online when he co-founded pooltables.com. For 6 years, he grew that company until selling the business. Not one to rest on the laurels of his successful exit, he decided to go to the Wharton School of Business as well as jump straight back into business at the same time by founding baby.com.br, Brazil's leading e-commerce retailer of baby products. This company went on to raise $40+ million in venture capital. Now, he is currently the founder and CEO of Cotopaxi, an innovative outdoor gear brand with a social mission at its core. He is also on the United Nations Foundation Global Entrepreneurs Council, a 9-member strategic advisory council committed to finding innovative solutions to global problems. Now, let's hack Davis Smith. Are you ready to start selling online but don't know the next steps? Now you can sell easily, quickly, and securely with 3dcart. 3dcart is everything you need to sell online. Creating, designing, and managing your e-commerce store has never been so easy. The 3dcart platform boasts hundreds of built-in features, point-of-sale system, a powerful admin panel, optimized checkout, over 100 professionally designed and responsive themes, plus 24/7, 365 free technical support and competitive pricing to meet any business's budget. Yes, even yours. Starting an online business has never been easier. Use 3dcart online store builder and shopping cart software to easily build an online store right the first time. And with our special offer, you can try 3dcart for free for an entire month to experience all of the shopping cart's software and powerful and intuitive features. With zero transaction fees and countless advanced features, it is absolutely no surprise that 3dcart continues to dominate the e-commerce market. Best of all, it's available for a low monthly price. Try 3dcart for free and get started in seconds. Just go to 3dcart.com/hack. As a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you will get your very first month absolutely free. That's 3dcart.com/hack to start selling today. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Davis, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John. It's great to be here.
It's absolutely my pleasure. I'm glad you're here. And I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
let's jump into it.
Yeah.
Davis, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Man, that's a good question. There's so many things that go into being an entrepreneur. It's definitely hard to identify, you know, one thing. You know, I'd say if I have to say anything, it's just, you know, being relentless. I think there's been a lot of times, you know, whether it's in business or just in different endeavors that I've been involved in, where people have just said, man, I can't believe you're like, you made that happen. Because the reality is that a lot of times when people are told no or that it can't happen, they just take that as like, okay, I guess it's just not going to happen. And I think as an entrepreneur, you learn, you know, pretty quickly, or maybe entrepreneurship attracts these kind of people, but people that just aren't willing to take no for an answer and find one way or another to make to make a business happen, or, you know, when things look like they're just going to fail or not going to work, that you pivot or you find some way to, you know, to resurrect the business. And so I think having like a relentless personality, being maniacal about the success of your business, I think that's one of the most important things that you can do.
Nice. I like it. Being relentless and being maniacal about your business. How do you sort of balance when someone's like, how did you make that happen? Or when somebody tells you no, or you hear no enough times, how do you sort of balance being relentless, but also listening to like external feedback and maybe people smarter than you?
Yeah, no, that is a tough balance. You know, I can maybe think of a couple examples. You know, I'll share one early example and then one more recent. You know, with starting my very first business, I started a business called pooltables.com. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You know, we basically started selling pool tables on the internet. I had the idea. My cousin and I jumped on a plane. We flew to China. Within a couple of weeks of having this idea, I basically Googled pool table factory China, found some factories, and we flew out there and started selling them online. And we were just bootstrapping the business. And we both came from very middle-class families, didn't have, you know, a ton of money. And so we had to get really creative on how to finance the business and, you know, borrowed money from anyone we could talk to, friends, family, small checks, you know, using credit cards, you know, convinced my parents and my in-laws to mortgage their homes. And, you know, and so we ended up doing $1 million in sales our first year. So saw a good amount of traction. And one of my early mentors, who was a successful businessman, I was talking about the business, giving him an update and said, hey, we're planning on opening up some physical retail stores. We believe that, you know, that it'll be this great synergy with online and physical retail. And, you know, his advice to me was, do not do it. You know, physical retail, that's what makes you guys different, is that you're online. And this was in 2004. So this is pretty early. But we felt strongly that we should open up these stores. And so we ended up opening a couple stores within a couple of months. One on the East Coast, one over here in Salt Lake City. And the stores ended up performing phenomenally well and ended up being, you know, a great win for us. And as every time I see him, you know, he's quite a bit older than me, but just an amazing man. And every time I see him, you know, he brings that up and just says, I'm so glad you didn't listen to me. And so that's, you know, one example of like, you know, sometimes you just have to go with your gut, even when you're hearing from people that you trust. But there's other times where I've gotten great advice, you know, in this current business that I'm in, you know, from on our board. We have some great board members that are on the board of Bonobos and that have invested in Warby Parker and Dollar Shave Club and Birchbox and a bunch of other great companies. And there's times when they, you know, they nudge me in the right direction. And, you know, there's countless times in a board meeting where I've sat and said, okay, this is kind of the direction we're heading. This is what we're thinking about doing. And they've, you know, they've maybe had me correct course a little bit. So, you know, there's definitely times where you need to do both, you know, stay your course. And there's other times where you need to be flexible enough to move. So,
yeah, exactly. And maybe it's easier, I guess, with a board. Cause I mean, if obviously like six people are sitting across the table from you being like, no, man, that's not a good idea. Rather than one person, it's kind of like, well, are you right or am I right? And sometimes you're right. You have to trust your gut. But I think if a whole bunch of people are all the other way, it's kind of like, okay, I'm just not seeing it properly.
Yeah. But sometimes even when all six people are saying that, sometimes you still have to go with your gut. So
that's true.
That's happened too.
I mean, that's what makes you an entrepreneur, right? I mean, you're going to be going against the grain in a lot of things, and you do just have to trust your instincts and go with it and push it, because lots of things don't make sense until they kind of begin to make sense because they've been pushed far enough. So
exactly.
That makes sense. Yeah. All right. So is this pool tables .com, that was when you were still in school? Is that how you explained it?
So I started pooltables.com right after I finished undergrad. So I had graduated and I ended up, I mentioned this mentor that had given me some advice, and I actually at this point I hadn't even met him when I was starting this pool table business, or right before I started it. And what happened, I'd read an article about him a number of years earlier when I was in school. And he basically, in this article, talked about this successful entrepreneur who had sold his business and had moved to the Philippines and started a program that taught poor Filipinos how to start their own businesses. And the article was like so inspiring to me. I ended up cutting it out and I put it in the front cover of my binder at school. I had this clear-faced binder, stuck it in this binder, and I would see this article 20 times a day my entire time in school for like 3 years. And, you know, I wanted it there because it reminded me what was truly important. And it wasn't about making a ton of money, but it was about finding ways that we could use the talents that we had to help other people. And I wasn't even sure what I was going to do when I grew up at that point. And it wasn't until I graduated and I was back on campus for a social impact conference that they were holding. And I was going through these different sessions. And in between sessions, I was walking down the hallway and I saw this man, Steve Gibson, from this article that was getting into an elevator. So I ran down the hallway and stuck my arm in the elevator before it closed and jumped in and just, and I told him, like, I know who you are and, you know, I know all about you. So, and he wasn't too freaked out. And, you know, the amazing thing was, you know, this guy was a multimillionaire and had changed thousands of people's lives. And I was a nobody, but he acted so flattered that I even recognized him and that I knew who he was. And so he invited me to come to his office. And a couple of weeks later, I met with him and I had basically put together a pitch where I was going to convince him to let me come work for him to help him expand his program in the Philippines to Latin America, where I'd actually grown up. And, you know, during this conversation, he went on to tell me, he's like, Davis, I'm so glad that you're so passionate about getting involved in helping people. But the reality is that if you want to make a difference in the world, you really need to become an entrepreneur. And then 10 or 20 years down the road, you can come back and you can find your own way of making an impact, but you should go start your own business. And I left that meeting. That's when I decided that I was going to become an entrepreneur. And just a few months later, I started that pool table business.
Wow. Wow. Because I was going to say, I wonder like if you learned under him in that way, but you had to just go out and figure it out yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I experimented with a few different ideas over a handful of months. And this is the one that, you know, that business kind of got traction pretty quickly. And so I quit my job that I, you know, just started out of school and threw everything I had into it. So.
I love it. I love it. All right. So at the beginning, you told us your ability to be relentless is your one thing. That's the thing that has made you the most successful. Now, every business expert talks about the 80-20 rule, Davis, right? Do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. Do what you're good at, delegate the rest. Davis, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Yeah. Attention to detail. I think like a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm total ADD. So I'm great at having a great vision of inspiring people in my team about the direction we're heading, about understanding what's important for the business to focus on. But then I need help. I need help in like actually executing on those ideas. And, you know, I try to build a team around me. You know, one of the first people I brought on here at Cotopaxi was a classmate of mine at Wharton. He was also, we did a dual degree program. It was called the Lauder Institute. And we basically did an MBA and an MA in international studies. And we were both in the same language track. We focused on Latin America and Spanish. And he's from Germany, but he'd been in the German Special Forces and then worked for McKinsey, the consulting firm, for a number of years and is a typical German, you know, very into the details. And so when I was starting this business, he'd actually been an entrepreneur. After we graduated, I'd moved to Brazil and started a business there. He'd stayed in the US and started a business here. And so he was just exiting that right when I was coming back from Brazil. And I knew he was the kind of person I needed. Just such an amazing guy to work with. We were really close friends in school, but you know, we offset each other's, you know, talents and skills. And he's been a great person to have on my team. And again, someone that, you know, I can kind of lay out a vision and he's going to be someone that, you know, by the end of the day, I'm just shocked at how quickly he's been able to execute on things and he's able to rally the whole team around, you know, a plan of action. And so, yeah, I think, like you said, I think every entrepreneur has weaknesses. And I think one of the keys is building a team around you that can offset some of those weaknesses and that allow you to really focus on what you're great at.
Yeah. Smart. Is he a partner or an employee?
Yeah. He's a partner. Yeah. I brought him on as a co-founder and he has, you know, significant amount of ownership in the business as well.
Right. And is that something consciously that you did like brought him on as a co-founder rather than just a high paid employee, or is that just what it took to get him in the door?
I'd say both. You know, my last 10 years before starting this business, I had started my last two businesses with my cousin and we started the businesses together. We split everything 50-50. And it was the kind of thing where we were working from day one together. You know, both of the ideas were ideas that I'd had, but we were working together from the very first hours of the businesses. And we knew we wanted to work together. And with this business, I wanted to do it a little different. You know, I feel like the reality is that splitting a business 50-50 and having a partner like that comes with a lot of challenges. And with this business, I basically, you know, I had the idea. I started working on it on my own, started building a small team around me that I knew could help us go build that business. And then, you know, brought Stefan in a couple months, you know, into that process. But I, you know, given the kind of where he came from, having, you know, he was a founder and a CEO of his own startup, you know, I knew that to get him involved, he would need to have some real skin in the game, and that he would need to, you know, he was coming in before we'd launched. So I truly saw him as a co-founder. And so that's kind of the direction I went with him. And I zero regrets. I mean, it was absolutely the right decision. And he's been such a great addition to, I mean, business is completely different because he's part of it. So, and you know, title and even co-founder status, it doesn't cost anything to do that. And so if you have the right person, I think that's something that an early founder should be willing to compromise on, is if you find someone amazing and that'll help get them on board and to help them really feel like they're part of building the business together with you, then it's worth doing that.
That's what I was hoping to get to. I love it. Because that's so true. It doesn't cost people. I think if people just hold on to this idea of, I don't know what it is, but not wanting to let other people in. But I don't think most businesses can get to where they need to be or want to be without the right dynamic of co-founders.
Totally, totally agree.
Which it sounds like you totally have. And you knew that going into it. So let's talk projects then, just in general. Or I mean, you could even use Cotopaxi if you want. But it could be even a smaller project within the company now. But you've, I mean, from pool tables to, I believe, like baby accessories to outdoor gear, it seems very like disparate and separate to me. But I would love to know like what your process is personally, and whether that's a written process you have or just an internal gut process again. But what is it, Davis, that you go through or like to decide now what like a project or a business is worth your time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And I would say, building on to that, I, you know, one of the biggest mistakes I see first-time entrepreneurs make is that they don't spend enough time in the ideation phase. They're willing to quit their jobs, to put everything on the line, to give the next 5 or 10 years of their lives to a business. But then they only spend a few weeks, you know, in the ideation and actually choosing the idea that's going to take everything from them. And so, you know, I always advise young entrepreneurs to be disciplined about a process. And what I mean by that is actually spending several months ideating before diving deep into any idea. Come up with as many ideas as possible. Keep a running list. Be disciplined about that. Be accountable with somebody else. Maybe it's another entrepreneur or a friend. Maybe it's a co-founder. But, you know, be disciplined about coming up with a bunch of ideas. I mean, if you come up with 2 or 3 ideas, the chance of one of those ideas being phenomenal is really, really low, no matter how smart you are and how creative you are. But if you come up with 50 ideas or 70 ideas or 100 ideas, in that list, there's going to be 1 or 2 ideas that are phenomenal. And then you just have to figure out what they are. And so, you know, when I started the baby business, my partner and I, my cousin and I, we had just sold our pool table business. And we were looking for the next big thing. And so we spent the first year in business school. I was at Wharton, he was at Harvard. We spent the entire first year in business school coming up with ideas. And we came up with 60 good ideas. And then we went out to Silicon Valley over that summer. Instead of getting internships, we went out and we worked that summer on those 60 ideas. So we filtered it down to 4 pretty quickly within the first week or two. And then we spent the rest of the summer working on those 4 ideas, vetting them, testing them, and trying to prove out which one would have the highest likelihood of success. And by the end of the summer, we'd identified 1 business. So we've taken the 60 down to 1, and it worked. You know, within 18 months of our launch, we had 300 employees and we had raised over $40 million in venture capital. And I think I attribute a lot of that success to, we identified an idea that was there in a place where there was a rising tide. The market was ready for us. And it was a big, big opportunity. And it wasn't the first idea we had. It wasn't even the 20th idea we had. So I think you just need to be very disciplined about the ideation and, you know, that filtering process.
Wow. I love it. And So at the very beginning, you said like entrepreneurs make the mistake because they don't spend enough time thinking about, or then spending, somehow you put in there that spending the 10 years on that idea and that project or that business. But is it like, is this sort of a timeline that you put onto an idea yourself? Because I mean, most of your businesses you've owned for a few years before being able to exit. So is it necessary to think that long term, and are you going to be into it, or do you know what I mean? In this sort of choosing the right idea stage?
Yeah. You know, it's a good question, but the reason I say, you know, 5 or 10 years is because that's typical. You know, it might be less. You know, my first business we did for 6.5 years. I was doing the baby business for 3.5 years from the time I started working on it to the time I left, you know, that which was much shorter. You know, this business, Code Epoxy, I suspect it'll be more like 5 or 10. You know, it could be longer. It's something I'm pretty passionate about and I would love to be a part of for a long time. But the reality is that every once in a while I hear a few, you know, young entrepreneurs say like, my plan is to sell this in 2 or 3 years. That basically never happens. There are examples, you know, but those are outliers. It takes time to build a great business. It takes time to build an amazing team. You know, so I think giving yourself at least 5 years, I think is a minimum when it comes to thinking about building, you know, a business that can be meaningful. So
good clarification. Yeah. And obviously through the ideation stage, coming up with 50, 70 ideas, narrowing it down, finding what you see as the right idea obviously doesn't always work out. Right. And I mean, as entrepreneurs, as human beings in general, I mean, one of our greatest struggles is that fear of being wrong, making a mistake, right? And totally failing. And it's something I think we need to sort of learn, obviously, to be able to handle. But Davis, could you sort of walk me through how to be wrong?
Yeah. You know, I've had plenty of failures, you know, within the businesses that I've built, that even if the business has been successful, you know, throughout the process, there's plenty of failure that happens. And then also, you know, in just coming up with ideas, for example, when I was working on the pool table business, when I was working on coming up with that idea, we played around with a number of other things. One of the other ideas I had was starting a business. So I lived in Peru for a while, and there were women in the streets that were selling these huge bouquets of beautiful roses, and like 2 dozen roses, and they'd sell them for like $1 or $2. And it was, you know, when I saw that, I realized, you know, and I'd gone to high school in the US, and I realized, oh my gosh, like I've been getting ripped off my entire life in the US whenever I bought roses for a girl or something. And so when I was back, you know, back in the US, I'm thinking about ideas. I thought, man, the rose business is really interesting. You know, that there's got to be incredible margins, especially if we bought roses directly from a farm in South America and sold them direct to consumer. There's probably a massive margin we could get. And, you know, Valentine's Day was coming up. So we thought, okay, what if we went and launched a business in this rose, in the flower space? And you know, it's the perfect timing. About a month away is Valentine's Day. So I started looking at, you know, farms in South America that I could bring roses in, and started realizing the timeline was not going to work. Plus, I would have to fill an entire container full of roses. And what if we didn't sell them all? It's like we'd be stuck with these perishable products that have no use the day after Valentine's Day. And so we kind of started testing different ideas about what alternatives do we have to test this idea? And we thought, you know what? Costco sells a dozen roses for like $13, even on Valentine's Day, even when everyone else seems to be spending, you know, selling them for 40 or 50. So we actually just called up Costco and verified, yeah, on Valentine's Day, they're going to be $13.50 or something. And so we basically locked up all these big businesses around our city, and we got them, their HR department says, email everyone and say, hey, you know, on Valentine's Day, instead of leaving work early to go buy roses, we have a company coming to deliver roses to the business, and you can pre-buy them here. And people would go in, they were pre-buying all these roses. So we sold thousands of roses, pre-sold them. And then on Valentine's Day morning, we just went to several Costcos and like bought every single one of their red roses. And in fact, we bought extra red roses because we thought this was so easy. You know, coworkers are going to see their friends bringing over roses. They're going to come last minute and buy roses from us too. Well, turns out that didn't happen. So we ended up delivering all the roses. But at the end of the day, we had like several, like, I don't know, it was like 100 or 200 dozen roses left over. And it was enough that it was like, it basically ate up all the profit. And we were like completely stressed out about it. We're like trying to sell them to anyone. Like I went to a mall and like tried to sell them the mall. The mall security like escorted me out of the mall to like, it was embarrassing. It was humiliating. And my cousin was out selling them on the street. Some homeless guy rolled up with a shopping cart and was selling roses next to him. And it was just, it was a complete failure. And, you know, we learned some great lessons. And, you know, I think part of starting a business is learning how to fail and learning how to fail fast. So experimenting and iterating in ways that you don't spend a ton of money, but you're able to test your idea. And then if it doesn't work, you know what? Your business isn't you. Just because the business failed doesn't mean you're a failure. You know, that's the great thing about the human spirit is that you're unconquerable. You know, you can always go tackle something new. And even if something fails, the next day you can be jumping into something new. And that's exactly what we did.
I love it. Your business isn't you. And it's probably something that you realized in that process. Like, this isn't like, I'm a failure as an entrepreneur. I can never do this again. It's just kind of, I'm going to stop trying to sell roses. That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is,
that's hard. It is hard to do.
It is hard.
Yeah, it is hard to do. And I won't say that I've been perfect at that. There's times when it's hard because you take this so seriously, your businesses and so, you know, inevitably it does impact, you know, the way you feel about yourself, if you're having success or not having success. And so, yeah, you just have to separate those two. And I'd say even when you're having success, you have to do the same thing, because it's too easy for it to get to your head. And you start thinking, oh, I'm just an amazing entrepreneur. I'm an amazing person, or I'm an amazing leader. And it's great to have confidence, but you have to also realize that, again, your business isn't you. And just because the business is having a great success doesn't mean that it's only because of you, or that it's going to always be a success. Because as we know, businesses have ups and downs. And so I think it's important to remember.
Right. Good clarification, because it's actually probably harder for people to admit their business isn't them when they're really on a roll successfully. Because then you think it's all me and everything I do is golden. And
exactly. There's a lot of luck involved, and there's also a lot of other people involved behind that person. So.
Exactly. So this is a great place to segue just into the final question. And this has been a lot of fun, but I do want to wrap up with this. It's this idea, Davis, I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap, which seems to be this gap sometimes that us as entrepreneurs and as dreamers, we live in this place where no matter how successful we are from the outside or how successful we look from the outside, we never see ourselves as successful, right? In 1 month when you hit that metric, or in 6 months when you stand on that stage, or in a year when you hit whatever goal it is you want for yourself, we both know that right before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future. And I agree, we have to push forward and always be sort of going for more, but sometimes we just live in this weird gap. So from the outside, I just want to tell you that you look absolutely successful and that you've accomplished a ton in quite a short span of time already. But I know that there's wins and losses, highs and lows that I don't know about. So I would love it, Davis, if you could stop and turn around and look behind you right now and tell me how you feel about the whole journey up until today.
Yeah, man, what a great way to end. I think that's a fantastic question. And I think, you know, there's maybe a part of this, actually, I've never heard this, you know, this phrase before, the entrepreneur gap, but I like that a lot. But you know, one thing I am familiar with is like imposter syndrome. And I think that's maybe part of this, right? Is that I think there's just an element of human nature where sometimes you think, man, I'm just maybe not as great as what people think, or man, people think I've done a lot of great things, but I'm just not as good as some of these other people. I know when I was asked to be a part of the United Nations Foundation's Global Entrepreneur Council, it's a small group of people. There's 8 of us. And some of these other entrepreneurs were legitimately better entrepreneurs than me. I mean, one of them has thousands of employees and he's a young guy. And there's a piece of me that thinks, oh my gosh, they're going to discover me. And they're going to realize I should not be here. And I think it's just a natural feeling that we have. And going along with your question, there's a lot of times when you look and you think, man, I started my first business when Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook. What's wrong with me? You know, why am I not that successful? But when I take a look back, like you said, and I look at the amount of learning that I've had and the impact I've been able to have on, you know, different markets, or on, you know, even the teams I've put together, one of my favorite things to do is look back at some of the early employees that I had in startups and to see that they've become entrepreneurs themselves, successful entrepreneurs. And that's one of the ways I've been able to, I think, measure success is how successful are the people that are around me. And I just can't tell you how much joy I get from seeing people learn and grow and me learn and grow right alongside them. So that's sometimes hard to do because you're always forward looking and you're always thinking, man, we need to be 10 steps ahead of where we are today. But I think it is important to look back sometimes and be grateful for what we have, because the reality is we have so much. We're so lucky and so fortunate to have the opportunities that we all have. And there's so many that have so little. And I think it's our responsibility as business leaders to find ways to give back to others. And I'm not just talking about employees. I'm talking about looking for ways our businesses can lift people in our communities, lift people out of poverty in the developing world. I mean, we need to actively be looking for ways that we can make the world better.
Absolutely, man. I love it. Beautiful answer. All right, Davis, we've got to talk about your business in passing. Could you specifically tell the listener where to find out more about your business and also where the best place is for them to track you down online?
Yeah, absolutely. So the business is Cotopaxi, and it's named after a volcano in Ecuador where I grew up as a kid. We're an outdoor gear company. We make packs and jackets, even tents and sleeping bags. You know, you can think of it as a Patagonia, but for the young millennial generation. It's an amazing brand, 2.5 years old. We sell online on our website, cotopaxi.com. So Cotopaxi. And our slogan is Gear for Good. And we use our profits to support poverty alleviation in the developing world. We hire refugees. We look for ways that we can make a positive impact in the world. And last thing I'll just say is, if you go on our website, you can also read about an event called the Questival. It's this 24-hour adventure race. We hold them all over the United States and pretty soon up in Canada. An amazing experience that everyone should try to be a part of once. It's an amazing event to be a part of, and I'd love to see some of you guys at one of our events sometime.
Awesome. Awesome. And you on Twitter?
Yes, Twitter at Davis M. Smith. You can also find me on LinkedIn.
Excellent. Twitter, LinkedIn, and cotopaxi.com. I will link to all those in the show notes for you so they're easy to find once you get back to a computer or head over there on your phone. But Davis, once again, thank you so very much for taking the time to share and join me today. And thanks so much for what you're doing. And please just keep doing, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Yeah, John, well, thanks. Thank you. It's been great. And thanks for helping share our story.
Davis, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for sharing so openly. And thank you for, I just want to say, like, thinking big, perhaps? You've done some serious things in a fairly short amount of time. And you've really, I love how you really stick to your gut and your impulses and what you want to do. Exiting a company, going back to school for business school now, against most people advising you to not do that, but you did it anyways, and then starting another company and another company. Brilliant, man. I love it. So you out there listening, I'm assuming you got as much, if not more, than I did out of that conversation, because Davis did not hold back and really, really shared a lot with us. A lot of the mindset and the whole ideation of new ideas. I love that part of the conversation. But I still needed to go back. Needed to listen to the conversation again as a third party, like you do, as a listener, and to see what I could find. So I went back and I listened. And then I went back and listened again. And then I went back and listened one more time. That final time through, Davis said something so very clear. He said that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I knew that to get him involved, he would need to have some real skin in the game, and that he would need to, you know, he was coming in before we'd launched. So I truly saw him as a co-founder. And so that's kind of the direction I went with him. And I zero regrets. I mean, it was absolutely the right decision. And he's been such a great addition to, I mean, business is completely different because he's part of it. So, and you know, title and even co-founder status, it doesn't cost anything to do that. And so if you have the right person, I think that's something that an early founder should be willing to compromise on, is if you find someone amazing and that'll help get them on board and to help them really feel like they're part of building the business together with you, then it's worth doing that.
And that's the hack. Davis. I love this. This is a huge, huge sticking point for a lot of people, I think. And it's the cause of a lot of businesses to not only not get as far as they should, but absolutely to just fail. Coming up with an idea is... It is a part of a business. It's possibly an important part, but it's not the most important part at all. I love how Davis takes on a co-founder because he wants to get involved and he wants his co-founder to have real skin in the game. He wants it to matter to him. If it doesn't matter to him in the same way, then his co-founder won't put his heart and soul into it, and it therefore won't get the best work and it won't create the best sort of outcome for the business itself. And then he admits that the business is now completely different because of bringing on that co-founder, which is just another way of saying that the business is now successful because of that co-founder and their two heads together rather than just Davis by himself thinking he knows everything. And then he goes on to say how it doesn't cost anything, right? I think a lot of people I've talked to seem to think that they want all of the business. I want to own all of it. They want all of nothing, basically, rather than some portion of something possibly huge or enormous. And that's what you have to get your head around. It doesn't cost anything because the idea isn't worth anything. Businesses aren't worth, especially, I mean, in Davis's case, he says we haven't even launched yet. So it's literally just bringing on a co-founder so that we equally are put into this. We both want this to succeed and we need this to succeed as much as the next person. It's that drive that makes businesses succeed. I don't care where your skill sets lie, you have weaknesses. I've interviewed 250 people now and we all have weaknesses. We need to become aware of those. Find co-founder or co-founders that can fulfill those weaknesses, that their strengths are your weaknesses and you guys complement each other. And rather than you going at it alone, you with one or two other co-founders, you seriously go it alone. Yes, you own less of something huge, but it's better than just staying and just hoping to hold on to this one thing all by yourself to be the sole owner of it. This is a really, really, really essential and important mindset sort of shift into becoming, I think, successful in entrepreneurship. It's almost that growth mindset rather than that fixed one. Like, I want all of it because it's only this big. It can get as big as it, like, it can be a $1 billion company if you have the right people involved doing it. It almost doesn't matter the market. Davis, thank you so very much. All right. That was a lot of fun. I think so. Yeah, that was. John@hacktheentrepreneur is my email. Drop me an email if you'd like or find me on Twitter and let's have a conversation. I'd love to hear what you're thinking of the show, what you're up to this summer, and I don't know, tell me about your projects. What are you working on? What's going on in your world? You get to hear from me. I'd love to hear from you. So it's john@hacktheentrepreneur.com is my email or track me down on Twitter. Let's have a conversation, shall we? I think we shall. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much for joining Davis and I today. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.